I hope you've had a great afternoon. I have enjoyed the afternoon. I appreciate the opportunities that I've had today, and I hope that you appreciate the opportunities that you've had today. Last week, I asked Kermit to read the book of Obadiah. I believe Bill said to Jennifer, why don't you just put a passage in there? Jennifer said, Roy said Obadiah. So I got a good comment after the message. Someone said, it's a good thing you didn't preach all that long after having have read half of the Bible. So this week I cut back. And Ethan, thank you for only reading about one third of the Bible. So I have a little bit longer tonight to preach because the Bible reading wasn't so long today. It was a great blessing to see everybody this morning. Lots of parents, lots of guests, lots of new students. Super day for us to welcome these folks into Freed Hardeman. We have a number of people who are here tonight that are associated with the college. Thank you for being here. Spoke to at least one lady that's headed to our Belgium program on Tuesday. And hopefully that will be great and go well. It's a lot of fun, and I know they'll enjoy that very, very much. Mystery to certainty. Now, if I said the name Perry Mason, only the old folks would get who Perry Mason is. But if you young folks had a chance to watch TVs back in the late 50s and 60s, you would have seen a lawyer that dealt with a different kind of murder all every time that show came on. And one of the key things about that, it was so mysterious. You go through the whole program and you knew there was a murder that was done, but there were four or five people who were good candidates for the one who had committed the murder. And as the climax of the show would come near the end of the show, they would take the camera and they'd put it on this person, and that person would be looking as guilty as they could look. And then it would pan to another person, and that person would look as guilty as they could look. And there would be four or five of those kinds of shots. It was a mystery. But then, in almost every one of those shows, there would be somebody that would jump up from the audience in the courtroom and say, I did it, I'm guilty, and they would talk about why they murdered the person that they murdered. Now, once that person revealed that they were the murderer, guess what? There is no more mystery. Now, there are a lot of people that think that the Christianity that we're asked to live every day is somewhat mysterious. That is, you just can't figure it out. And we can only know when the Lord reveals all of that to us in the day that He comes back and takes His children home with Him, then we'll know. I think there are a lot of things that we're going to be surprised about that we thought we knew that we didn't. We thought we knew people, but we didn't really know them. We thought we knew circumstances, but we really didn't know them. We thought we knew motives, but we really didn't know them. I think the Lord is going to educate us in ways that we just cannot even think about today. And yet, the Lord has revealed mysteries to us. And when they're revealed, and since they are revealed, they should no longer be mysteries. Well, the book of Habakkuk is a great book to help us think about mysteries, things that were mysteries to the prophet, but God revealed some answer. Do we understand it fully? We may not, but God reveals the answer. So what I want to do tonight is think about, from the mysteries that were in the heart and mind of Habakkuk, that came to have some certain answers from God. Now, do I understand everything to know about this? I don't. And neither will you when we're finished. And I believe that in this kind of respect, God will be revealing some things to us that we do not know, but on the way through life, there are many things that we can know. Since I was thinking about mystery to certainty, I got online and I just looked at reasons why people think that it's crazy, that it's mysterious. Why do so many people think that Christianity is the way to live? Well, when you look at our culture, fewer and fewer people are thinking that way in terms of polls that are being done. I want to share with you some things that people have said. This first one would have been perfect in Habakkuk's time. It's perfect in our time. Why do people want to live Christianity, somebody says? They don't live it. This person said, why should you believe? Look at the Christian church. Look at it. At its best, it is dull, it's boring, it's unexciting, and an irrelevance to life in the modern world. People come together on a Sunday, some even do it twice. Sing, pray, listen to someone explaining the Bible for about 30 or 40 minutes. Get a life. What is that to offer anyone in today's world? Is it not just incredible that thinking people, so-called thinking people, would do such a thing on Sunday when they could have a long lie in bed, they could go to Starbucks, they could watch a movie, they could go to the pub? And look at these Christians. They say that they are the children of the living God, that He indwells their lives, that they are heading for God's eternal presence. Listen to this next sentence. Would the way they live tell you that? If seeing is believing, then there is nothing to see in the church that would make anyone want to believe. It's a mystery to the person who wrote that, why you are here tonight. How about the certainty of that for you? Another person says the God of the Bible is a barbaric God. Such view is much more indicative of ancient conceptions of a king in a cruel world than in what Christians today would expect from such a God. That was from an article entitled Debunking Christianity. And then another person writes, why would anyone want to be a Christian? Look at the world. Evil exists in the world. My favorite argument for the non-existence of God comes from Epicurus. Is God willing to prevent evil but not able? Then He is not omnipotent. If He is able but not willing, then He is malevolent. Is He both able and willing? Then whence cometh evil? Is He neither able nor willing? Then why call Him God? Another writer says, I've heard so many people say, God allows us to have free will. If we do evil with the free will, it isn't God's fault, but our own. That makes me want to do evil to the people who say worthless, thoughtless garbage like that. Is it really a little girl's free will to be kidnapped, molested, raped, tortured, murdered, and left on the side of the road in a plastic bag? Is it a woman's free will to choose a man because he seems to be a good Christian, only to find out that his spirituality has caused him to repress perversions that lead to his arrest for molesting children? Is it the free will of all those precious children who die of leukemia or AIDS, or who were born into the world handicapped or diseased at no fault of their own? Whose free will is that? And then one person, John Pavlovich, says, I no longer believe in a God who would choose sides in any war, who would revel in violence, who would rejoice in death, who would celebrate genocide. The God I no longer believe in is what he was writing about. Now, when you start thinking about that, and we start thinking about the relevance of those statements, because there are many people who believe in those ways. When you take a look at the book of Habakkuk, the prophet has some questions that he wants to raise. He was filled with some troubling questions, just like people today are filled with troubling questions. And as you think about him, most prophets take God's message directly to the people. In other words, God said, Moses, you go tell those people, these are my laws. Moses goes and he tells the people God's message. Habakkuk is different, however. He takes the message of the people to God. They have the troubling questions in their hearts and in their minds that Habakkuk had. Now, the word Habakkuk means embrace. And Martin Luther said this about this name and this book. He says his name speaks as one who took his nation to heart, comforted it, held it up as one embraces and presses to his bosom a poor weeping child, calming it and consoling it with good hope. That's what you see, Martin Luther says, when you read the book of Habakkuk. Now, what I want to do in the next few minutes is to share with you two mysteries and then two certainties. The first mystery that we have here, we read a little while ago. Look at verse 3. Habakkuk is speaking to God on behalf of the people. Why do you make me see iniquity, and why do you look idly at wrong? Habakkuk looks at all the evil in the world, all the sins of the people of Israel. He's looking just like we could look at all the sins of people who are Christians today. Habakkuk was looking at the evil that exists in the world of God's physical family, Israel. And the prophets over and over and over again tell us about how evil they were, all of the wrong things that they've done, even to taking their babies and offering those babies as sacrifices on the altar. And God said, I never had that in my mind. So here's the first mystery. Why would God look upon all the evil that is in the world? Why would he look at the sins? And it seems to many people that he just looks upon those sins. Habakkuk, one of his conflicts is, the way you look at evil and the way people in the world are practicing evil and doing things that they have no business doing, that would never be in your mind. Here's Habakkuk's conclusion. The law is paralyzed and justice never goes forth. For the wicked surround the righteous, so justice goes forth perverted. In other words, the people aren't fair. They aren't dealing fair with each other. In fact, they aren't dealing fair with themselves as they come to live life before God. That which is fair and just and right before God is being perverted because the people are living the kind of lives that are sinful, and God, you are just looking upon that. And so the question is raised. Here's the mystery. How can the Lord justify his apparent indifference to such things? That's not just a question we're asking today. It's the question that people were asking through the prophet Habakkuk. How can the Lord justify that? You see people all the time. I was reading again another illustration the other day about somebody using King Saul. God telling him to go and utterly destroy. You destroy the men, the women, you destroy the babies, you destroy the animals. How can God justify that at all? And people are saying, if that's what God is about, I don't want anything to do with that. You see, it was a mystery in the time of Habakkuk. But there was another mystery that Habakkuk raises for the people. Why do you remain silent when the wicked swallows up the man more than the righteous? Did you listen a while ago when Ethan read from the book of Habakkuk and the Lord is telling him, look, I'm going to raise up a thing that is so terrible that if you were to hear it, you wouldn't believe it. God's vengeance and God's wrath is going to come in such a strong, tough way. Habakkuk is going to shake his head and say, I don't believe that. You wouldn't do that, God. You're a loving, gracious, merciful God. You would not do that. So, why would God let all this sin and evil occur in the first place? And now, why is God going to choose an ungodly nation like the Babylonians, who were extremely cruel and who were very idolatrous? They didn't love God. They didn't try to keep God's commandments. They did what they wanted to do. And God is going to use them to discipline the nation of Israel. How do you look upon this stuff, first of all, God? And how in this world can you justify taking a nation like the Babylonians and really cruelly disciplining the people of God? It's a mystery. Isn't it amazing? It's still a mystery to many people in our world today. As I think about all of this, We see people in the book of Habakkuk not understanding God. And as we think about that, when we look at this, how can a holy God, how could he take an unholy and an ungodly nation and use them to accomplish his will? Doesn't make sense to us unless we really study and come to know God. So we have the two mysteries. How can God look on this evil and all of this sin? And secondly, how could God use this ungodly nation to discipline? What we want is absolute certainty. Every time, every age, every generation lives in uncertain times. We just don't know what is going to happen. I do not know anything except I passed the TV as I was visiting someone today, and it was talking about something awful going on in Afghanistan. And the president was addressing that, apparently. And I'm thinking, what's new about that? There's been horrible, awful things going on in Afghanistan for a long time. How could we be too shocked at anything that would occur in the country of Afghanistan? It is uncertain how that's going to be. When we start looking, I saw another blurb. It went from that really quickly. And our president is telling us that China is really paying for these tariffs. We're not. We don't know what's going on. We're thinking, some of you who are looking at the stock market really closely, you're all upset probably because it may be in turmoil and things may go in a way that you don't like. It's uncertain. We live in uncertain terms. We'd like to know for sure. You know, when these people try to sell us on keeping our retirement fund and our money that we're saving, we'd like to, for them to say, look, we guarantee you there's going to be a 10% return on all of this stuff. The best they can do is tell you, well, here's what's happened in the past. And we expect that to happen in the future. But we don't know what's going to happen in the future for sure. We just expect it. So we're looking for certainty in uncertain terms. And it's always going to be uncertain in terms of the ways of this world. Here is certainty number one that God responds to Habakkuk and to his people with. God has always acted righteously in the past. Habakkuk could not go back. He might point to some circumstances where he didn't understand. But God is going to be able to respond with a response that says that God has always acted righteously in the past. Now, this text tells us, behold, his soul is puffed up. It is not upright within him. But the righteous shall live by his faith. Okay, now what do we do in light of all the evil that's in the world, Habakkuk is saying to God? What do we do in the light of this major, powerful, cruel, idolatrous nation that's coming to destroy many of us, to tear our things down, and to take and plunder our goods? What are we going to do about that? Here is the thing that ought to be certain in every one of those people that Habakkuk would take God's response back to. You live trusting in God. You live by faith. The righteous, that person that is good and right and is going to see God, is going to put their trust in God, and it's going to stay. You want to know what should happen if the stock market falls? Put your faith in God instead of the stock market. You want to know what to do in case some nation like China invades America? Put your trust in God, not in our armed forces. You want to know what you do when any negative thing in this life that you could conjure up may happen out there, and it may. You trust God. God says, the righteous shall, what's that next word? Live. The righteous will live by faith in him. We are not going to go away to nothing. Might some nation come in and defeat us? They surely might. Might the bottom fall out of the stock market? We've seen it before, haven't we? It might. But God promises us life when we trust Him and we listen to Him and we obey Him. Now, verse 4 tells us these people that are coming are proud. They are arrogant. They think they are in charge of the whole world. And you know what? According to man, they were in charge of much of the world at that time. Almost all of it. They were so powerful. They were so big. They were so broad in their authority and power. They did control the world. But God promises the certainty of judgment for a sinful, prideful nation, no matter how we might look at them and how powerful and strong we might think they are and how afraid we might be of them, it is certain God is going to judge them. But you remember, the righteous are going to live. You're going to live by faith. Habakkuk is going to take that message. And you see, he's brought it to us in this great book. So we have mysterious things, if you're just looking from a worldly standpoint and not trying to understand God and listen to God. But certainty number one is that God has acted righteously in the past. He's going to keep acting righteously in the future. There were five woes for judgment here. Let me share those quickly. Woe to the proud possessed with the lust of conquest and plunder. That's what Babylon was. Woe to their efforts to build a permanent empire through cruelty and godless gain. That was Babylon. Woe to those who build cities with bloodshed. They would come in, and you can read stories, all kinds of horrible stories, about them killing ruthlessly so, cutting the bellies of pregnant women open, taking young babies and smashing their heads on rocks. It's such a horrible thing to read about what those kinds of people did. That was Babylon. And then, woe to those with cruelty in their treatment to those that they conquered. They would take them, they would relentlessly pursue and be so cruel in their pursuit of overcoming their enemy, and then they would continue to treat them in horrible, ugly, awful ways. And then, woe to those given over to idolatry. You can disavow God all you want to. You can set up some kind of idol to worship. And the reality is those people are going to be judged. Those five woes were specifically stated in the book of Habakkuk. You can be certain that there is woe going to be pronounced to anybody, anywhere, at any time in life. They are going to be judged because of their behavior and their attitude. Certainty number two. No matter what comes, Habakkuk, who accepted the challenge that God gives us to live by faith, Habakkuk says, no matter what comes, I will rejoice in the Lord. Can some power come along and take our homes? Yes. Can something happen and our money be gone, our jobs be gone, our houses be gone? Absolutely. Those things can happen. They've happened many times over. We've been blessed, those of us who are alive in this room today, we've been blessed with a very peaceful homeland. We've been blessed. The Civil War was horrible and ugly because it was fought right here, and it was brother against brother here in America. Even that could happen again. But what is certain is, if we believe in the Lord and we are faithful, we are going to live. The righteous are going to live by faith. And then the certainty is that every day, no matter what else happens in the world, no matter what comes, no matter what negativity, we have the blessing and opportunity of rejoicing in the Lord. Now, I confess to you, it's easier for me to rejoice when I have some money in my pocket. when I have plenty of food to eat, when I have a job when I want a job, when I'm able to go where I want to and do what I want to, when I'm able to have the friends I want, when everything is working right, it is much easier for me to rejoice even in the Lord. But you see, it doesn't take a lot of faith when that's the way life works. It's hard to give God the credit for all of that good. We want to take some of that credit. But even in the good times, rejoice in the Lord. God has given you and me everything that we have. But we know that we can rejoice in the Lord. The blessings that Jesus gave to us on Calvary are going to be there no matter what else comes in this world. Habakkuk gave us faith and assurance as he gave it to his people. He prayed for God's action and for God's mercy. He said, "Oh Lord, I have heard the report of you and your work. Oh Lord, do I fear? In the midst of the years, revive it. In the midst of the years, make it known. In math, in wrath, remember mercy." If I took math, I would need mercy. I suppose that's why that came out. But God is telling us, through the writing of Habakkuk, we need to be looking for those kinds of things from God. Send us your grace. Send us your mercy. Send us your help. In spite of all the evil and all the evil people and all the evil nations, we can be certain that we have a right, and it ought to be certain in our lives, that every day we rejoice in the Lord. Habakkuk gave us plenty to think about. And then he closes with praise for God's past deliverance. He wasn't giving thanks for how powerful the army was under Saul or David or Solomon or any other king. And there were some great armies in Israel's past. This is about God. His mighty works in the past, he enumerates those. We can go back and we can read about all the things that God did for his people. We look at the plagues and how God's deliverance in Egypt and opening the path in the Red Sea and feeding them in the wilderness and giving them rivers of water in the wilderness. God did all kinds of great things. Those are listed over and over again in the Old Testament. We need to think about that. Habakkuk was thinking in that way, bringing both judgment to the wicked and salvation to his people. That's always been there. Always been there. And as we think about that, we want certainty in uncertain times. I think about Habakkuk's world. There were uncertain things that caused questions to come. God responded with certain answers. I remember in the lectureship of 1999 on a Thursday night, I'd been to Memphis every day visiting my mom. I meant to go the next morning on Friday morning after chapel and spend the weekend with her. I never got there to visit her. I received a phone call during the presentation on Thursday night of lectureship. It seemed to me that I knew what it was, and it was one of my brothers had called me to tell me that our mom had passed. Well, you think about changes in a world where we had a woman who was the queen of our family, who was the center of our family. If I called my mom and said, "Mom, I'm coming to Henderson today," she would have every person in our family at her house for a meal when I got there. She would do all of that. She would bring all of that to be. She moved our family in ways that were unthinkably great. That came to an end. Just didn't happen anymore. I used to talk to her some as I traveled. And we would talk and we would enjoy, so much so that there were times after she died that I would want to just get my phone and dial her number, but I could have done that, but the number wouldn't work. It didn't exist anymore. My life changed. Some of you have had death change your life in awesome ways, worse than us losing our mom, who was one of the best people I've ever known. There have been some difficult circumstances in relationship for some of you. It's been ugly. It's been hurtful. It's been sad. There are some people sitting in this room tonight who are dealing with illness, difficult illnesses, not a common cold where you need to blow your nose and cough a little bit, but serious, life-threatening illnesses. When we start thinking about certainty in uncertain times, I would encourage you to think about this profession of faith. Ethan read it a while ago, but I want to share it with you again as we close. Though the fig tree should not blossom, nor fruit be on the vine, the produce of the olive failed, and the fields yield no food, the flock be cut off from the fold, and there be no herd in the stalls, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will take joy in the God of my salvation. God the Lord is my strength. He makes my feet like the deer's. He makes me tread on high places. God sets us up for success because it is a certain thing tonight. The righteous, that person who does what is right according to God's will. The righteous are going to walk by faith. That means they're going to live life by faith. They're going to trust in God no matter what comes. They may see horrible, terrible things in the world or in their personal lives. And they're going to continue to walk by faith. God revealed to us how to step into His world by faith. By repenting of the sins that we learn about in His Word, by turning away from them, confessing His great name as the Savior of the world, the Son of God, and being buried with Him, not just dunked underwater, but being buried with Him in baptism, so that like He was raised from the dead by the glory of the Father, we might also be raised to walk in newness of life. The just, the righteous, will live by faith. Once we're children of God, we're encouraged to continue to walk by faith. The Apostle Paul said, we walk by faith and not by sight. We walk trusting God, not because we see everything clear, we know everything, but we trust God is going to cause us to live. No matter what comes, God is going to cause us to live if we walk by faith. And so tonight as we close, we sing this beautiful song. And it's there to encourage people who need to begin a walk of faith by being baptized into Christ or to come back to the Lord. There may be a need for you to come and let us pray with you about circumstances in your life, trusting that God is going to give us the very things that we need. And so I beg you, if you're in this room tonight, and you need to begin or renew your walk by faith so that you can live with God, please come to the front and let us help you. Would you stand and let us sing?